Today, as you know from the sheet, I will talk about the five qualities of a yogi. That means five qualities a yogi should possess. And these five qualities were taught to Prince Bodhi. Now, once when Buddha was living in the country of Bagga, Prince Bodhi invited the Buddha to his new palace to take meals. So Buddha went there and took meals. And after Buddha finished taking meal, Prince Bodhi said to the Buddha, "Bhante, pleasure is to be obtained not by pleasure. Pleasure is to be obtained by suffering." So in response to his talk, Buddha related to him his renunciation and his struggle for enlightenment. And this is the place where we find the struggle for enlightenment, Buddha's struggle for enlightenment in Buddha's own words. So that discourse is recorded in the collection of middle-length sayings. Actually, Buddha related his struggle for enlightenment to another person as well. And that another person was Mahasachaka. So to Mahasachaka and later to Prince Bodhi, Buddha related his own struggle for enlightenment. You can read the Buddha's struggle for enlightenment in English translation in the book called The Middle-Length Discourses of the Buddha, translated by Bhikkhu Nyanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi. But you will have to read the Mahasachaka Sutta, not Bodhi Raja Kumara Sutta, in that translation. Because although everything that was related to Mahasachaka was given in full in the Bodhi Raja Kumara Sutta, in the English translations, they do not repeat, say, what had been translated before, and so they will refer you to the Mahasachaka Sutta. So you can read that sutta, Mahasachaka Sutta, which is number, I think, 36, sutta number 36 in the Majjhima Nikaya, or the collection of middle-length discourses. So Buddha related how he renounced the world when he was still young, and how he practiced austerities in the forest. And then that practice was finally found to be wrong. And so he discovered the right path, and he practiced the right path and gained enlightenment as the Buddha. And Buddha related also the events that took place after his enlightenment until the five disciples became arahants. After Prince Bodhi heard what Buddha related to him, he asked, "Bhante, how long will it take for a person or for a monk who gets you as a teacher to practice meditation and to reach enlightenment?" Then Buddha first said, "Prince, I will ask you a question first. Are you skillful in handling the goat when riding an elephant?" Goat means G-O-A-D. It is like a spear the elephant man used to control the elephant. So Buddha asked, "Are you skillful in this art of handling the goat while on the back of the elephant?" Then Prince Bodhi said, "Yes, Bhante, I am skillful in this art." Then Buddha said, "What do you think? Suppose a man come to you who wants to learn this art from you, who wants to train under you, and if he had no faith and could not achieve what can be achieved by one who has faith, if he had much illness and could not achieve what can be achieved by one who is free from illness, that means who is healthy, if he was fraudulent and deceitful and could not achieve what can be achieved by one who is honest and sincere, if he was lazy and could not achieve what can be achieved by one who is energetic, if he was not wise and could not achieve what can be achieved by one who is wise?" So how many qualities?
Five
qualities now. These are deficiencies, not qualities. No faith, no health, no honesty, no energy or lazy, and not wise. So if that person has these five deficiencies, what do you think? Could that man train under you in the art of handling the goat while riding an elephant? Then the prince answered, "Venerable sir, even if he had one of those deficiencies, he could not train under me, much less if he had all five of them." That is what the prince answered. Then the Buddha asked Prince Bodhi regarding the five positive qualities. Buddha said, "What do you think? Suppose a man come to you thinking that Prince Bodhi is skilled in this art of handling the goat while riding an elephant, and I will train under him. And if that man has faith and could achieve what can be achieved by one who has faith, if he is healthy and could achieve what can be achieved by one who is healthy, if he is honest and sincere and could achieve what can be achieved by one who is honest and sincere, and if he is energetic and could achieve what can be achieved by one who is energetic, and if he is wise and could achieve what can be achieved by one who is wise, what do you think? Could that man train under you in the art of handling the goat while riding an elephant?" Then the prince answered, Venerable sir, even if he had just one of these qualities, he could train under me, much more if he had all five qualities. Then Buddha said, So too, prince, there are these five qualities of a yogi, of a person who is practicing meditation. And then Buddha pointed out these five qualities. Now the first one, Buddha said, here a bhikkhu has faith. He places his faith in the Tathagata's enlightenment thus. Tathagata means the Buddhas. That blessed one is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened and blessed. Now, you may notice that this is actually the translation of the formula you all are familiar with, iti piso bhagava araham samma sambuddho, and so on. So by this, Buddha taught that if a person is to practice meditation, here a monk, if a monk is to practice meditation, he must have faith in the Buddha, in the enlightenment of the Buddha. That means Buddha had attained the enlightenment. And in the text, this faith is explained by way of the nine qualities of the Buddha. So to understand and to believe in these qualities of the Buddha. And that is called faith here. And so this is not a blind faith, but it is faith founded upon understanding. When a bhikkhu has faith in the Buddha, he has faith in the Dhamma also, because Dhamma is the teachings of the Buddha, and what the Buddha attained at the moment of enlightenment. So when he has faith in the Buddha, he also has faith in the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha. And when he has faith in the Buddha and the Dhamma, he has faith in the noble disciples of the Buddha. So the commentary explains that although only faith in the Buddha is mentioned in the text, we must understand that he has faith in all three gems, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Now, the practice of meditation and how to practice meditation are taught by the Buddha, and so they are included in the Dhamma. So when we have faith in the Dhamma, we have faith, or rather confidence, in the practice. So we need to have confidence in the practice. That is, just by paying close attention to the object, we can discover or we can penetrate into the nature of things. We can discover the three general characteristics of all conditioned phenomena that we must have confidence in. Because it was taught by the Buddha, and Buddha practiced this himself, and he got the best results of this practice. And only after he got the results did he teach to the world. So we need to have confidence in this method of practice, that just by paying attention to the object, just by being mindful of the object, we can penetrate into the nature of things, and ultimately we can achieve enlightenment. In other discourses, faith is compared to a hand. Now, when you have a hand, you can pick up things that you want, you can pick up things that are beneficial for you. In the same way, when you have faith or confidence, you can pick up wholesome mental states. You can pick up merit. If you do not have a hand, you cannot pick up things. And if you do not have faith, you cannot get wholesome karma or wholesome mental states. So faith is compared to a hand. And now we know that faith is an important factor, important quality. A person who wants to practice meditation should develop. To develop faith, we need to listen to Dhamma talks that promote faith, or read books that help us to develop faith. So by listening to the Dhamma talks or by reading books, we can develop faith or confidence. Confidence in the Buddha, in the Dhamma, in the Sangha, confidence in the practice. And here we may add that we need to have confidence in ourselves, because if we have no confidence in ourselves, we cannot do anything. So it is also important that we need to have confidence in ourselves. If other people can do, we can do also something like that. So the faith in the Triple Gem is a quality to develop, and also faith in the practice, and faith in oneself is to be developed. So, the first quality a yogi should possess is faith or confidence. Now the second is health. Buddha said, he is free from illness and affliction, possessing a good digestive heat that can digest evenly, that is neither too cool nor too warm, but medium, and able to bear the strain of striving. So a yogi should be healthy. He should be free from illness and affliction. Only when a yogi is healthy, can he really practice? So if he is not healthy, it may be very difficult for him to practice. So health, or freedom from illness or affliction, is another quality a yogi should possess. And when describing the health, Buddha said, possessing a good digestive heat that can digest evenly. Now, the original Pali word here is gahani, which means stomach. So possessing a good stomach. Possessing a good stomach means possessing good digestion. So the commentary said that here the stomach means the heat element, which is born of karma. Now, heat element is a material property. Now, there are material properties that are caused by karma, and there are material properties that are caused by mind or consciousness. and that are material properties that are caused by climate or temperature. And there are material properties that are caused by food or nutrition. So there are four kinds of material properties. And this one, the fire element, which is located in the stomach, is the result of past karma. So whether you have good digestion or not depends on whether you have good karma in the past. So people with good karma have good digestive heat, and so they do not have any problem with digestion. So we need a good digestive heat. We need a good heat element that is the result of karma, so that we can practice meditation with diligence, with effort. And Buddha described that heat as that can digest evenly, so that can digest what we eat evenly. And it is described as neither too cool nor too warm or too hot. Now, it is said that a person whose digestive heat is too cool is sensitive to cold. And a person whose digestive heat is too warm is sensitive to heat. So if you are sensitive to cold, maybe your digestive heat is too cool, it's not enough. And if you are sensitive to heat, your digestive heat may be too warm. And Buddha said, it is neither too cool nor too warm, but medium. So it must be neither too cool nor too warm. And it is able to bear the strain of striving. That means even when you make effort, it must not be negatively affected. So that is also important. Sometimes if you make too much effort if you make much effort, your digestive heat may suffer. So a good digestive heat can digest food evenly, and it is neither too cold nor too cool nor too warm, but it is medium, and it is able to withstand the strain of striving. So with such digestive heat, a yogi should be endowed with. Yogi should be endowed, or briefly, a yogi should be healthy. So according to this teaching, a yogi should have good health. But what if a yogi does not have good health? If a yogi has some disease, can he practice meditation or not? There may be somebody among people assembled here whose health is not very good, who may have some diseases like diabetes or some other ailments. So they do not possess good health. Would they be deprived of practicing meditation? Or should we tell them you cannot practice meditation because you are not healthy? I don't think so. Here Buddha gave the best quality, the best ones, because if a monk possesses these five qualities, and if he gets the Buddha as a teacher, Buddha will later say that he can achieve enlightenment in 7 years, until it comes to 7 days, or if he is instructed in the evening, he will attain enlightenment in the morning. If he is instructed in the morning, he will attain enlightenment in the evening. So Buddha was giving here the best conditions, the best qualities a yogi should possess. But if a yogi does not possess good health, still he can and he must practice. Because the more one is not healthy, the more there is a need to practice. So if we have good health, then it is very good. If we do not have good health, still we can practice. Regarding the third quality, Buddha said, he is not dishonest and deceitful, but shows himself as he actually is to the teacher and his companions in the holy life. So a meditator should be honest. He must not be deceitful. If he has done something wrong, if he has some faults, he must be willing to reveal it to the teacher or to his companions in the holy life. And also, the yogis should be honest when they are reporting. So they are to report only what they actually experience, only what they actually see or know, and not say anything from other people's experience, just to have something to report to the teacher. So it is very important that we should be honest in reporting to the teacher. So honesty, or saying what is truthful, is also very important. And we should not be embarrassed to confess our own faults. So if we had done something that is wrong, then we must readily confess it to the teacher, to the Buddha, if Buddha is living, or to the companions in holy life. That means to the fellow monks or to fellow meditators. So honesty is a quality to be developed by those who practice meditation. Now the fourth quality is effort, or to be energetic. So Buddha said he is energetic in abandoning unwholesome states and in undertaking wholesome states. Now, effort or energy is to use or to be used for abandoning unwholesome states. So in order to abandon unwholesome states, in order to prevent unwholesome states from arising, we need to make effort. If we do not make effort, we will not be able to abandon, or we will not be able to prevent unwholesome states from arising. So we need to make effort to abandon them. And also in undertaking wholesome states, we want to do some merit, we want to do something good, we have to make effort. If we are lazy, if we do not want to make effort, we will not acquire wholesome states. We will not accumulate wholesome karma. So to be energetic, or to make effort, is one quality a yogi should possess. The other day, I told you that effort is like heat, so it can heat up or burn up unwholesome mental states. So in order to refuse unwholesome mental states entry into our minds, we should be energetic. We must make effort. And also to acquire merit, to do wholesome deeds or karma, we need to make effort. So without effort, they cannot be done. And Buddha said, he is steadfast, launching his effort with firmness. So we must be firm in making effort. We must not make effort, how do you call that? We must not make effort without firmness. And we must not put aside the responsibility in cultivating wholesome states. That means it is not my duty, or it is not my responsibility to do wholesome deeds. So we just ignore doing wholesome deeds. We must not be like that. So a yogi should make every effort, say, to abandon unwholesome states and to acquire wholesome states. So he must make strong effort, not cursory, right? Not cursory effort, not weak effort. He must make strong effort, a sustained effort, so that he can abandon unwholesome states and develop wholesome states. With regard to making effort, Buddha had some more teachings for the monks. Buddha said, two things, O monks, I came to know well. Not to be content with wholesome states of mind so far achieved, and to be unremitting in the struggle for the goal. So these are the two things Buddha said he came to know well. Not to be content with wholesome states of mind so far achieved, and to be unremitting in the struggle for the goal. That means to make effort until the goal is reached. In the Mangala Sutta, Buddha taught that contentment is a blessing. Contentment is a quality we should develop. But there, contentment means contentment regarding the worldly things, not contentment regarding spiritual things or spiritual practices. So here Buddha was saying not to be content with wholesome states of mind so far achieved. In the Dhammapada, Buddha taught practically the same thing. Okay. So Buddha said in Dhammapada, not by mere morality, not by mere purity of sila, should a monk rest content. So if a monk is pure in his sila, then he must not be content with that. He must not be content saying, oh, I have pure sila and I can get attainment at any time and I will not make effort. So Buddha advised against that kind of thinking. So Buddha said, you are not to be satisfied by just the purity of sila. So it is good to have purity of sila, but you are not to rest content with purity of sila. And then Buddha said, you are not to rest content just by practice of the ascetic practices called dhūtaṅgas. Now monks are exhorted to practice dhūtaṅgas also, like taking the meal in one sitting, or keeping only three robes, or staying at the cemetery, and so on. So these practices also are for monks to perform, to practice. And Buddha said, if you practice these dhūtaṅgas, do not be content with just practicing dhūtaṅgas. There are many more for you to do, something like that. The Buddha said, you are not to be content with much learning. You are not to be content saying to yourself, oh, I know a lot about the teachings of the Buddha, and it is not for me. I don't need to do anything more. So even if you are conversant with the whole Tipitaka, still you must make effort to reach the higher stage. So you are not to be content with just much learning of the three baskets of the Buddha's teachings. And suppose you practice samatha meditation and you gain jhanas, but you are not to rest content just by the attainment of jhanas. It is good to attain jhanas, but jhanas by themselves will not lead you to the understanding of the true nature of things and to attainment of nibbana. So even if you have gained the jhanas, you are not to rest content. You must strive further to reach the highest goal. Even if you have reached the third stage of enlightenment and become an anagami, you are not to rest content. You have to make effort further to reach the higher stage. So you are not to rest content until you reach the extinction of all mental defilements. So Buddha said he came to know well two things, and one is not to be content with wholesome states of mind so far achieved. So one can be content only when one has achieved the highest goal, that is reaching the arahantship. And the second thing is to be unremitting in the struggle for the goal. So we must not stop making effort to reach the goal. We must not give up making effort to reach the goal. So until we reach the goal, we must make effort unremittingly. And after saying this, Buddha said, unremittingly indeed did I struggle and I resolved. That means Buddha not only exhorted the monks to be unremitting in the struggle. Actually, he did struggle unremittingly. So he himself practiced what he taught. He taught this because he had practiced this himself. So when he sat down under the Bodhi tree to practice meditation to gain enlightenment, he made a resolution in his mind. I will not break this sitting. I will not change this sitting until I reach enlightenment. So he made a very strong resolution in his mind to keep the position intact until he reached Buddhahood. And Buddha told us how he made the resolution. Let skin, sinews, and bones remain. Let flesh and blood dry up in my body. Yet there shall be no stagnation of energy till that is attained which can be won by manly strength, manly energy, manly effort. So this is the resolution Buddha made. Let the skin, sinews, and bone remain. Let the flesh and blood dry in my body. But I will not stop making effort until I attain that can be attained by manly strength, manly energy, and manly effort. The effort Buddha resolved on, like let skin, sinews, and bones remain, is called effort with four limbs, or effort with four parts. And these four are: skin is one, sinews another, and bones another. So we get three parts or three limbs here. Let the skin remain, let the sinews remain, and let the bones remain. And then flesh and blood are taken as one. So let the flesh and blood dry up. That is one limb or one part. So altogether there are four parts in this effort that Buddha resolved on. And later you will see Buddha exhorted monks also to resolve on effort in this way and not let up effort until they reach the highest goal. I think we should all memorize this passage. Let skin, sinews, and bone remain. Let flesh and blood dry up. Yet there shall be no stagnation of energy till that is attained, which can be won by manly strength, manly energy, and manly effort. So when we sit down for meditation, if we have memorized it, we should recite it about three times and then go on practicing. This will remind us not to let up, I mean, not to flinch from making effort. Buddha proceeded saying, through heedful effort have I won enlightenment. Through effort have I won the unsurpassable security from samsaric toil. So it is through effort that Buddha attained enlightenment. When Buddha gained enlightenment, there will be no more suffering in the samsara. So Buddha said, I have won this unsurpassable security from samsaric toil. And then Buddha exhorted the monks, if you too, O monks, will struggle unremittingly and resolve, let skin, sinews, and bones remain, and so on. So Buddha exhorted his disciple monks to do the same, to resolve on this strong effort and to do accordingly. The Buddha said, monks, if you make effort like this, you will soon realize here in this life, through your own direct knowledge, the unequaled goal of the holy life. That means you will reach Nibbana by making effort like this. So Buddha exhorted his monks to be unremitting in making effort, resolving on this effort with four limbs. Bye. Now the last the last quality. Buddha said, he is wise. He possesses wisdom that is able to discern rise and disappearance, wisdom that is noble and penetrative and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. So a yogi should possess this kind of wisdom or knowledge. And what kind of wisdom is this? Wisdom that is able to discern rise and disappearance. So that means he has reached the stage in vipassana meditation where he sees the rise and fall of aggregates, where he sees the arising and disappearing of the objects he puts his mind on. So this last quality is for those who have already begun the practice of vipassana. So, and Buddha mentioned this because when a yogi has reached this stage, the stage of seeing the rise and fall of the aggregates, he will not go back. He will move on farther until he reaches the goal. So Buddha here mentioned this vipassana knowledge as a quality a yogi should possess. And Buddha described this wisdom as noble. So noble means pure. So this knowledge or wisdom is free from greed, hate, delusion, and so on. It is free from mental defilements, and so it is called noble here. So noble means pure. And also Buddha described it as penetrative. Now, the commentary explains this word as meaning breaking or destroying the mental defilements. So penetrate here, according to the commentary, penetrate here means not understanding, not going deep into the object and understanding it, but here penetrating means destroying the mental defilements. So it can destroy the mental defilements, this knowledge of discerning the rise and fall of the aggregate can destroy the mental defilements. Now, what kind of destruction do you think it is? Total destruction or momentary destruction? Not total. Because here he is practicing vipassana, he is still practicing vipassana meditation, he has not reached the goal of vipassana meditation. So during vipassana meditation, a yogi destroys or a yogi abandons mental defilements. But that abandonment or the destruction is momentary. So momentary means so long as you are mindful and you are seeing rising and falling of aggregates, no mental defilements can enter your mind, and so you are preventing the mental defilements from arising in your mind, and that is called here destruction of mental defilements by vipassana. So by the destruction by vipassana is not total, not once and for all, but it is momentary. And this momentary destruction will develop ultimately into total destruction when a yogi reaches enlightenment. So the fifth quality a yogi should possess is the knowledge of discerning the rise and fall. And this can lead ultimately to complete destruction of suffering. So now we know what qualities we should possess when we practice meditation. So the first one is we must have faith. And the second, we must have good health. The third, we must be honest. And the fourth, we must make effort, sustained effort. And the fifth, we must have the understanding of rise and fall of aggregates through the practice of Vipassana meditation. So if a yogi possesses these five qualities, he is sure to reach his goal. That is why Buddha said, if a monk is endowed with these five qualities, and if he gets a teacher like me, he will attain enlightenment in a very short time. When the Buddha stated the time, first he said 7 years, and then he reduced the time to 6 years, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then 7 months, 6 months, and so on, until he reaches one week. And then he said, a person who is instructed in the evening can gain enlightenment in the morning, and who is instructed in the morning can gain enlightenment in the evening. That is, when he gets a teacher like the Buddha, and when he possesses these five qualities. So we should strive to possess these five qualities so that we can also reach our goal. As we learned yesterday, we are to keep the balance of the five faculties. So although we must make effort, we must be unremitting in our making effort, at the same time, we must see to it that we do not do it too much. Because if we make too much effort, we will become agitated, and the balance will be disturbed. So it is a sustained and strong effort we must make with this resolution that let the skin and sinews and bones remain, and let flesh and blood dry up in my body, but still we must keep it in balance with concentration or with other controlling faculties. So if we keep in mind this balance of five faculties, and we try